everyone. My name is Matthew Endest. I'm a recent graduate of LSU, and this is a portion of my research from a dissertation, and it's titled Within Canopy Distribution of Cotton Fiber Yield and Fiber Quality. So just a quick reminder for everyone, Gossypium hirsutum, or upland cotton, is natively a perennial shrub. It's been adapted to annual cropping systems, and it represents more than 95% of the United States production. And about 90% of the global production, marketed primarily for the lint of those fibers, but there's also a secondary market for the oil and the seed as an animal feed. So when I talk about fibers, we're talking about individual cells that have dried out and are just the remnant cellulose of those cells. If we compare these to other natural fibers that are on the left side, you can see a lot of difference between the shape and the structure there. Cotton has a flattened ribbon shape, and it's a lot of convolutions along the length of it. It's a very important fiber, or it's the most important natural fiber crop, and its biggest competitor is with synthetics. And synthetics offer uniformity and consistency along the length of the fiber, but those convolutions of cotton impart a lot of the properties that make it desirable for textiles. So in order to be competitive, we are trying to achieve less variation within a bale for these fiber quality traits. So to talk about the yield part first, just want to define the yield components, and these I'm referring to the number of bolls per unit area, be it a plot or a single plant or an entire acre, the weight of these bolls, and also the third component is the percentage of those bolls, which is the lint and not the seed. So if we multiply these together, you have your yield per unit area. So if we look at the way the plant holds these bolls, there is a consistent interval between the flowering on the plant. As you start from the first flower and move upward, there's 3 days interval between the first flower and the next node. And as you move vertically up the plant, there's a 3 day interval. However, if you move outward on a fruiting branch from a position one to a position two, position three, there's a 6 day interval there. So across an entire plant, we're talking about a 30 day flowering window. And if we consider that bolls take more than 50 days to fully mature, they're experiencing a wide range of environmental conditions. And this imparts unique traits or unique properties as you move bowl to bowl. So I wanted to look at how these unique microenvironments were influencing the variation within the canopy. So to do this, I took three of the elite adapted lines from Louisiana's breeding program, or from the university's breeding program, as well as two commercial checks, and grew them in 2 years in two locations in a randomized complete block design. And they were harvested using a box mapping approach, where plants were harvested by hand from within a plot, and the bolls were combined across those plants into each of these cells. So each cell represents a specific node and position combination, and then each of those were analyzed separately. So for the just one little bit about the yield part, in comparison to a study by Dr. Jenkins in 1990, he described this at the bottom, this bottom right table showed that 71% of the yield came from first position bolls, 20% of the yield was in second position bolls, and the third position bolls represented only 3% of the yield. When we looked at this with more modern genotypes and within Louisiana, we found that there was a different distribution of where this lint was being held. We found a lower percentage at the first position, but the second and third position had a much higher percentage of the yield. And also to make note of here is that in these 25 years, we've seen over 30% increase in yield with the genotypes that are in production. So it's possible that these outer bolls are making up for that yield, but that's just a thought there. So we are seeing a change in where the yield is coming from on a plant, and this could have impact on management decisions as well as how we harvest and hand sample in order to make selections if we're making representative sampling. So I'm going to shift over to the fiber quality portion of my research, which was the main focus of what I was doing. Cotton fiber testing was established via the Smith-Doxey Act of 1937, and this established standards for all bales of cotton that were grown and marketed in the United States. This was originally done by hand classers, but due to the demands of the number of bales and how much was being marketed, we've moved to high volume instrumentation, which gives a set profile of traits of micronair, length, strength, uniformity, and elongation. And this guaranteed the assessment of fiber quality to be consistent and was done so to strengthen the U.S. economy for cotton. So in working with HBI at the fiber testing lab, I developed a curiosity for micronair. And what I found out, or what I learned, was that over the past 10 or so years, there was an upward trend across the entire cotton belt for increasing micronair. But on a year-to-year basis, there's a lot of variability. And if we look specifically at the Rayville Classing Office data, this is from 2014, more than 50% of the bales that were assessed at this office received a discount, which is the red bars. They received a discount because the micronair was too high. It was over a 5.0. Less than 1%, if you can even see the green bars there, that's the percentage of bales that received a premium because of their micronair. So this is a big problem for Louisiana, and Rayville also classes some of Arkansas cotton, but in this area or this environment, we have a high micronair problem. So I wanted to address or look at ways of understanding micronair and how it can be improved. So I found out that micronair is a unitless measurement of the airflow permeability of a cotton plug at a specific density. However, it's been reported that it is a poor representation of its two component traits, which I'm going to talk about here in this slide. Micronair is a combination of both fineness, of fiber fineness, and also the fiber maturity. And fiber maturity is the degree of filling of that lumen on the inside of the cell. And this imparts dye retention and a little bit of strength. And fiber fineness determines how fine of a yarn can be spun. And so these are both important to yarn spinners and textiles in general. And the problem comes in when you look at micronair. What we see as a premium cotton at a 4.0, it could actually mean a coarse fiber that is immature, or if we move down this four line, it could be a fine fiber that is fully mature. So getting a 4.0 in micronair could mean a wide range of both fineness and maturity, and this has a lot of implications for how these are going to spin and how consistent your yarn is going to be at the end. This quadratic equation down at the bottom shows that fineness and maturity, the product of those two, is related to micronair through this complicated quadratic equation. So measuring them directly seemed like a good approach to understanding what was going on with these traits. So I looked at several different instruments, and for the purpose of my research and the box mapping, I needed an instrument that could handle small sample size but also give a good measurement of these two component traits, and the cotton scope was such an instrument. So the image on the left shows a cutting system where a fiber sample is chopped and weighed to 50 milligrams, so it's very small sample size needed, and they are suspended in a water bath, a surfactant solution to disperse the fibers, and then using polarized light microscopy, the computer captures images of these agitated fibers, and fineness and maturity are calculated from the birefringent property of the crystalline cellulose. So this instrument was used to analyze all the fibers within the plants. So this is the analysis of variance using PROC mix and each of the sources of variation that were examined, and genotype, node, position, and an interaction between the genotype and node and the node by position were all highly significant for fineness, maturity, and micronair, which was measured using a fibernair. Again, because the sample sizes of these bowls were often too small to run through an entire HBI, so I just used the component fibernair. But what we see is that there were differences between the genotypes. However, the interactions based on where it was located on a plant, could make it difficult to distinguish between genotypes if we're not sampling consistently. So looking at the distribution within each genotype, first with Micronair, the two commercial checks are on the left, and they're very close to that 5.0 mic on average, which would be the discount range. And these three adaptive lines, which have been selected for higher quality within Louisiana, had a much lower Micronair value at 4.5 and 4.6 and 4.3 across to the end is the 4.3. So these had a lower Micronair value. And if we look at the fineness within the genotypes, that same trend is there. The two commercial checks were coarser fibers than the three adapted lines. And the one on the right, the LA103-07021, had the finest fiber. So it seems to match the trend with Micronair. And this is the percent of lint yield at each, or the finest for that percent of lint yield. So if we go on to the maturity ratio, that trend kind of breaks down, and we see that all of these genotypes were all fully mature, and there wasn't a consistent trend in relation to the Micronair values. So it seemed that fineness and Micronair were correlated in some way. And so just the point here on this correlation analysis, I wanted to look at the correlation between the Micronair and really the fineness, which is the seven column. And we saw 0.88 in correlation between Micronair and fineness. And what this indicated to us was that Micronair seems to be suitable with fully mature fibers in improving fineness. So in conclusion, I think sampling technique needs to be consistent both across and between populations in order to avoid significant sampling bias, especially with these traits where there's a lot of within plant variability. That Micronair seems to be adequate in order to improve these fine fibers, unless we're looking at exotic germplasms or immature types. And that while the cotton scope is valuable because it is able to discriminate very small differences between materials, it seems more useful in identifying genes or where you need very precise measurements, but it seems to be maybe overly precise for something like a breeding program where we're looking for those differences. So in conclusion, I just want to thank my graduate committee and the fiber testing lab at LSU, as well as the cotton structure quality group at the Southeast Regional Research Center, and the people there that have helped me through this, as well as Cotton Incorporated for their financial support. So if there's any time, I'd like to take questions. Okay. Yes. We were able to run a little more than 30 samples a day, but the cost of the instrument itself, I'm not sure. I didn't pay for it. I don't own one. So, but it is cheaper than an HVI or an APHIS machine. Any other questions?
Matthew, I've got one. As I'm walking through my nursery, and I'm making individual plant selections, how important is it that I may choose plants with second, third breeding positions versus just either doing a random or ones with prettiest bulbs?
You're making individual plant selection?
Individual plant selection.
Well, in terms of the fiber quality, it would, you know.
I don't care about fiber quality. It's all about yield.
Yield. Okay, about yield.
That's not true, though.
Right. It would depend on the weight of the bulbs, I guess. And yeah, what looks pretty sometimes in the field could.
But I mean, based on your information, though, you're saying.
You want more bulbs.
That the. If I read it correctly, that. A lot of the yield increases may be attributed to second, third fruiting positions.
It is possible. I mean, it's just an observation more than.
So should I make larger emphasis on choosing plants with those, even though they may be missing first fruiting positions, or?
If they have more bulls in total, then I would say so.
Okay.
How follow up on that, you noted that the 30% increase in yield over some period of time, do you think that increase is genetic?
I think it's a combination of genetics and management practices, improved management.
Well, if you go back to the playing of Don Newbie's work in corn, where genetic gain to yield with zero over the last 100 years. Relate that to cotton, you think zero in cotton and genetic gain, true genetic gain.
I haven't looked at the data to be able to say with certainty, but I would hope that the breeding efforts are not fruitless, but being able to capitalize on those management decisions as well, having the right varieties that work here. Yep.
Can we not forget that yield too has increased in past years over
that? So all of these environmental factors could be attributed to yield and having varieties that are adapted to those environments that are, I think, critical. Thank you.